Welcome, Buckeye fans, to another edition of the 360 with Ohio State Athletics podcast. It's presented by Kroger. I'm Timmy Hall, in for our friend Matt Andrews. Now, I got to tell you, I have been really, really excited to talk to today's guest, Nadine Muzzerall. She's the head coach of the Ohio State women's hockey program. Now, there are a lot of successful programs around the Block O. We know that. Football is always right at the top in how they perform, always competing for championships. We're hoping that they do that again. But when you look at this women's hockey team, they are performing at a ridiculously good level. You could say they're the best program at Ohio State. They have won 2 national championships in the last 3 years. They're the reigning national champs. Only thing was, in the 2022-23 year, sandwiched in between the 2 national titles, they made it all the way to the national championship game and lost a heartbreaker. They were runner-up that year. But listen to their wins these past 3 years. 32-6. 33-6-2, 35-4. It's simply remarkable what she's doing. And Nadine's already chasing down her 200th win as Ohio State's coach. So I've been dying to catch up with her to talk about where her love for the sport came from and how she's become so darn successful so fast. Like a lot of these coaches I've been doing the podcast with, they were nice enough to invite me over to the offices. So I got to take a trip out to the iconic St. John Arena. I know St. John Arena's old, but boy, is it nostalgic. I'll always have a special place in my heart for St. John Arena. And we picked things up with Coach as I asked her about where her love for the game of hockey began. And not surprising, it goes back to her childhood growing up just outside Toronto, Canada. Here's our conversation. Enjoy.
Growing up in Toronto, a town called Streetsville, just outside of Toronto, probably 45 minutes away from Toronto. Mm-hmm. You grow up with an ice rink in your backyard, self-made ice rink, by the way. And so I have an older brother, Darren, that's 3 years older than me, and we were raised by a single mom. And my mom is from Scotland, so she never had her license. To this day, she lives with us, and she doesn't have her license. Wow. And so we grew up wanting to play hockey because that was just part of our culture, just like football is here in Ohio. And a little more difficult to just pick up and play the game of hockey than throwing a football around in your backyard. So
absolutely,
we had a lot of snow in Streetsville. So what we did is we would pack the snow with the shovels, and then we would get the garden hose and thumb to hose and spray the entire backyard and let it freeze. And we would do that every night for hours and hours. It would be my left thumb and then my right thumb. And then when I couldn't feel them, it was my brother's turn. So we did that for hours and hours. And then my mom used to call us in for dinner. We'd never come in. We ate dinner outside. And so finally, when it froze over, my brother and I would play each other for hours and hours in our backyard. And then when it was kind of a warm day, you'd hit a patch of grass and go flying into our boards, which was just a snowbank. Or if you lost the puck, you would just see the hole in the snowbank and you'd have to go searching for it. And so I grew up just with the absolute passion and love for the game of hockey that I would say I contribute to my father, who played hockey growing up in New Brunswick. So back then, that's what you had to do, right? Hockey was expensive. Getting ice time was rare. If you wanted to play, you had to be creative and make it work.
I love that, though. I mean, everybody talks about pond hockey, mm-hmm. and that just, you mentioned nostalgia and just sort of, that's the throwback way to play the sport, being outside, which is why it's so cool that you see these outdoor games right. that are going on. But
they have compressors to make it easier. We do not have that.
Yeah. I mean, you talk
about for us.
You talk about really having to make it work where mm-hmm. it's just the garden hose, and using the
and
cold
Mother
weather.
Nature.
Yeah, yes. Using the cold weather that you have there in
and
Canada.
And commitment with you and your older brother, with me and my older brother.
I can imagine. I mean, everybody knows about how that's the national sport of Canada, mm-hmm. and was there a way that wasn't going to be the sport for you growing up there? It seems impossible not to at least right. maybe you don't become a hockey coach, but you at least have some deep level of interest in the sport growing up there, being from there.
Hockey's not easy to fall in love with in the sense of you always have the bad ice times where it's still really dark outside and it's 5-6 in the morning, you know, because they give the better ice times to the older kids or
right.
the elite kids. So when you're a kid trying to play, all the equipment you have to put on, and it smells, and it's dark, and it's cold, and it's a long, long season, and you have to be very committed in order to pursue hockey.
All right, you've convinced me now, too. It is a tough sport to get involved with. Yeah,
it's not for everyone, that's for sure.
What do you think you're made of that attracted you to the game?
Well, my brother played, so I wanted to do what Big Brother did. It was just the two of us. And then, like I said, my dad played high-level hockey, and he was very good. He coached me for a little while. But I would say it was my mom, single mom's driving force, that made me want to be elite. And I'll tell you something. Like I was saying earlier, my mom doesn't have her license. So in order for me to play, a girl back in the early 80s. Oops, I try to give myself too much credit of how old I am. We always had those bad ice times in Vic Johnson's Arena in Streetsville, which was about 3 to 4 miles from my house. And I would get fully dressed at 5 a.m. in my hockey equipment. My older brother, Darren, would have to come with because nobody else was at home with him. And then we would have to go outside. And this was not where you had mud rooms back in the day. You had to literally go outside, and the garage door kicked open. So in order to pull the garage door to kick open, we had to shovel in front of the garage, because you'd have to shovel the snow in order to kick the garage door open.
You have to pop it out.
And probably kick the handle because it's frozen. Pull it out. And my brother would get on his white BMX bike, and I'd get on the back of my mom's green bicycle with all my equipment on, with my stick across my lap. My brother had my backpack with my skates in it. And I'd get on the back of my mom's seat, which was this hard purple seat that is definitely illegal for any kid to sit in nowadays.
Goodness.
And she would pedal me, you know, on the bike 3 to 4 miles in the dark so I could practice and play with the boys.
Wow.
In order to play every Saturday morning. And then I was the first female hockey player inducted in Minnesota's Hall of Fame. And you know what my mom bought me as a congratulatory gift?
The bike.
A bike and a card that said, this is how it all began.
That's amazing.
Yeah, but you know,
you talk about what moms do for
us. Yeah, I know.
Right?
So when I get upset with her living with me, I got to calm down because I have to remember what
goodness.
Annabelle has done.
You said it was called Vic Johnson.
Yeah, Vic Johnson's Arena.
What can you remember? What things are in the memory bank about Vic Johnson's Arena? I assume it's the first arena you ever
for sure.
were
first,
in to
my first rink,
lace
my
up the skates
first
and play.
Rink. Yeah, I remember having to go into a boiler room or into the women's bathroom because I couldn't go in with the boys, right? And I remember going on, and everything was wooden. Like, the ceiling was all wood. It was this big arched rink. There were seats on both sides, so when you're a kid, you just had fans all around you, which was really probably your
Sounds
family.
Really cool.
It was really cool. I actually went back probably a decade ago. It's probably been the last time I was at Vic Johnson's, and they modernized it, and I think it lost its touch, really. But I mean, that's what everybody wants now,
right? Yeah,
but I remember
we did that to the Field of Dreams for the baseball fans out there for the movie based in Iowa.
They commercialized that too. I went there, and they were bulldozing like another field.
Come on, we're building a baseball stadium out there. Keep it just a farm, right? But I know what you mean, like the place you grew up in, and then they renovate it, they try to make it better for the community now, but it loses some of that allure.
But I was the first girl there, so there's some pride in that. But now there's a lot of girls playing in Streetsville, so that's cool.
So take me through the levels of school hockey, and what was that like for you? I mean, you mentioned being the first girl to play there. What was it like middle school, high school, and then before you wound up making the decision to go play for the Gophers, to go to Minnesota? Sure.
So I played boys hockey all the way till I was about 12.
Yeah.
And I played with, Vic Johnson, so Streetsville Tigers. And I used to get hit a lot because I was pretty good, and I would just get reamed. I remember one time some guy just clocked me at center ice without the puck, and my brother jumped over the boards and was running on the ice towards the guy. See, nowadays,
he was just there as a fan.
My brother was just a fan.
Just street
and he was
clothes
on street
and shoes.
Clothes and shoes. But nowadays that would be deemed crazy. Back then that was, you protect your younger sister.
Absolutely.
That was normal.
I got no problem with
it. No problem. So then I went to the girls. I played for the Mississauga Chiefs, which was our city team. We did quite well. We won numerous provincial championships, which, you know, is all of Ontario. It's
Absolutely.
Great hockey. I got scouted at one of our big tournaments, and to go play at a boarding school out in New Hampshire called Kimball Union Academy. Mm-hmm. And I remember saying to my mom, I don't want to leave Canada to go to the U.S. and play hockey, because hockey wasn't as big for girls in the U.S. My mom saw a big picture of academics, 10 kids in a class, you know, and I think I needed to get on the straight and narrow when I was 13 and 14.
Sure.
Mom didn't like me dating Mark Tucker, so I think she wanted
Mark was bad news,
yeah,
huh?
Yeah, Mark was bad news. He was a good guy. But so then I went to Kimball Union Academy, and it was very progressive, because Canadians didn't leave Canada to go play in the U.S., but my mom saw big picture, you know, opportunity, academics, and I was one that needed that attention probably in school and to be held accountable, and I did. I went there for 4 years. We won the championship my junior and senior year. I was scouted heavily throughout the nation at that point.
Sure,
and, I was tried up. I got called up to go to the Olympic tryouts when I was 17, 18 years old. And then Minnesota was calling. And the big teams back then was University of New Hampshire, Northeastern, a lot of East Coast schools, St. Lawrence. I was looking at those schools, and all of a sudden Minnesota comes in, because Minnesota was starting their program. It was the inaugural season.
I was going to say, I believe I read that you were there for the beginning of the program. You were on the very first team of Minnesota women's hockey. And what year was that?
Okay. 1997-98 season.
Oh, come on. That's not that long ago.
Not that long. Feels like it. Last year feels a long time ago. But so I went to all these recruiting trips, and there was just something that mesmerized me about Minnesota. I think it was their love of hockey. The 1980 Miracle on Ice, Herb Brooks coached for the Gophers.
Absolutely.
Hockey was important there. And I really chose Minnesota for two major reasons. One, the coach, Laura Halderson, who is my mentor, a role model for what I do now. And then she was a great recruiter. She would go and have dinner at my mom's house when I was at boarding school. So she would just go and connect with my family even when I wasn't there. And
that's cool.
That was important to my mom, a single mom.
That seems
mom.
Different.
Very different, because my mom wanted to know who's going to take care of her baby girl when she goes off to college. And Laura was there when no other coach was doing that. And my mom felt that connection. And when you are raised by a single mom, mom's word goes a long way. And so I felt that connection with Laura as well. And she always tells me to even this day, coach their hearts, Muzz, just coach their hearts. And the other reason I chose Minnesota was it was the inaugural year. I wanted to help build something into greatness. I didn't just want to be another number on a roster. And I felt that me and my teammates did that. You know, now I can go back and take Brady and Bella, my kids, to Minnesota and show them the banners that mommy helped hang in the rafters.
That's so cool. And I mean, everybody associates both Canada, where you grew up, and Minnesota in the U.S. for just being hockey places and hockey being in the culture and being in your blood. And I think in Ohio, you know, we've got a good hockey town. We've got a good hockey town. We've got a pro team. We've got two teams here at Ohio State that perform really well. You guys, my goodness. I mean, I guess I could just say you guys are the best program at Ohio State right now. So congratulations for that. But winning two national championships in 3 years is no joke. And it seems and feels like you have taken everything that you learned from your mentor in Minnesota hockey and found a way to put your own spin on things and put it in the blender and spit out this unbelievable amount of success here at Ohio State, which I doubt anybody in this administration thought could happen. I really do. And you've done it here.
Thank you. I agree. I think a lot of it was my upbringing. I'm old school. You have to bend a little bit to how life is changing and the culture and the society that we live in now. But your grassroots, and as long as my compass continues to point north and doing what's best for the brand and the program and not for an individual, I think everybody, all the ladies on the team can relate to it, because they know I'm doing what's best for the team.
Yeah.
And I was raised, like I said, blue collar, single mom. And that's when you come to a school like The Ohio State, grateful is one of our beliefs in this program.
Sure.
Because you can have anything you want thanks to our football program and its success. But we're not going to forget why we started to play hockey and the love of hockey, because sometimes we can get blindsided, as athletes nowadays can get blindsided by exterior motivators instead of what internally motivates you.
Right.
And that should be the passion of the game.
Right. Like you're talking about, and I see a lot of the things that are written up on your culture playbook here, and it's about playing for her. It's about, you know, be an attitude thermometer. It's about, you know, realizing what matters. And I assume a lot of that is just blocking out noise and loving the sport and wanting to be as good at it as humanly possible. And figuring out a way to coach that into your players every single day that they're even just practicing.
Well, you have to recruit the athlete and the parent, because the apple doesn't fall too far from the tree.
Yeah, I believe that.
So I love stories. I love hearing what parents do for a living and how they got to where they are and what sacrifices they had to make. And
yeah.
And so for me, when I created that culture blueprint, I did it with Scott Daly, a Navy SEAL that worked with Focus 3 at the time. And we sat down, and where it really stemmed from was the nucleus around here at women's ice hockey is family, because no one on our current team is from Ohio. And so all we have is each other. My entire staff, no one's from Ohio either. So we really lean in on each other. And again, I remember how Laura Halderson recruited me. And for me, it was same thing. I want to know who the heck's going to take care of my baby girl, Isabella, when she goes off to college. And that's important, mm-hmm. because you're recruiting the athlete, but you got to recruit the family. And you sign up for all of it, right? Good, bad, indifferent. But
yeah.
I think our athletes get that, because one thing that I think we do a good job here is being very clear of our message and who we are, and not to shy away from it based on social noises and exterior factors. Because at the end of the day, we make it very black and white. This is who we are. Do you want to sign up for it? I mean, it looks really sexy on the outside, winning jewelry and trophies. But when you get in here, it's really hard.
And
we're okay to push you.
Yeah.
And we're okay to say no once in a while. I swear to you, it is very similar to parenting. I will love you. I will take care of you. I'll have your back and loyal to you. But we might have to whip your butt from time to time and hold you accountable. Well, no different.
But
you have to do it.
It's got to happen. And especially when you're playing a physical game, there's a type of edge and there's a type of toughness
mm-hmm.
that you got to be able to have. And I think you had a press conference a few months back, and you were answering a question sort of about how you built the program and how you got it this way. And you talked about how, you know, once you've been doing this for years and established your program, then the recruiting can kick up to another level. And there is something there where there's a facilities mismatch, I know, that we constantly are hoping that is gonna go in the right direction here soon. And I know you want that more than anybody. But the fact that you have recruited in this way, when you do have some programs like Michigan and Minnesota and Penn State out there, and you've gotten better players, but you talked about, forget about the talent that we have. There's a type of nastiness that you have to go out there no matter what. Mm-hmm. Like, you almost have to pretend that you're trailing a game by 3 goals at all times. Mm-hmm. And that's how you want your team to play.
I like that. Yes, there is a nastiness to it. And it's very true, because, you know, we don't have the geographical location like the Wisconsins and the Minnesotas do, right? It's just not a hotbed here.
Yeah. Oh, I left out Wisconsin. That's right.
Okay.
They've been pretty good.
But, you know, that's all right. But, I mean, that's just, we knew that when we signed up for this job, right? So we knew we had to grind it out and work harder. And I think that's what the athletes see in us coaches, is how hard we grind, and you're not outworking us, right? We're going to work just as hard, if not harder, to continue this program to be successful. And to be honest with you, we now do things that other coaches don't do. Like, I'll go into Minnesota and I will run a 7th and 8th grade and 9th and 10th grade clinic.
I love that.
In Minnesota.
I love that.
So kids can get in front of us and how we coach, and you can, you know, build relationships through the camp, because you can't talk to them until, you know, June 15th after their sophomore year. So this is a way. But then you got to go into enemy territory. And, you know, we did it in Boston this year too. So we're doing things to be creative, because we know there's not as much depth here in Ohio.
Yes. Yeah.
So how do we how do we beat the best at their game? And the way, like I was just speaking about earlier, and the way we tell our kids is we will outwork you and try to find ways to beat you.
I just can't get over it. That mentality has to be the answer for why you've done what you've done as a program the last 3 years. Because if you are working, if you're going to outwork every single team in the country, and then you're also going to eventually match them and in some cases exceed them in talent level and mm-hmm. just the girls, the young women that you're recruiting,
mm-hmm.
then this is what you get. You'll
right.
You'll maybe only lose a handful of games all year in a 35-40 game schedule. And how have you been able to keep them working? I assume like Herb Brooks, like the legs feed the wolf, right? Yeah. Like once you keep winning like that, mm-hmm. you taste how good it is, mm-hmm. how rewarding it is, and then the drive seems to still be there to just keep doing it. You're off to another great start to your season, and it just seems like old hat now. Like you're going
right.
to be one
I
of
mean,
the best
I,
teams in the nation.
I want to continue to stay relevant and creative and be in front of the other coaches that I compete against.
Yeah.
And that's what's great here at Ohio State is we have resources that allow us to do those things that maybe some other teams cannot do. But we also have to be very creative in order to do that. So, for example, we have a great sports performance team here. So we're hydrate testing them every day to protect them from soft tissue damage.
Yeah.
We have, you know, S2 Cognition, which is a group that works with the NFL, Major League Baseball. They're getting in a lot of college football teams such as Louisiana, Alabama. And we are now working with them last year and continuing this year where they test the brain in terms of the sport that they play. So you see over there, it looks like a little PlayStation game.
Mm-hmm.
So they do three areas of your vision, your read, react, and your execution. And then there's a test on that. You get a score. And then we as coaches can see the areas that they're weaker. So they might understand the game and have great improv, but
adaptability,
they might
but yeah.
not have great vision, so they don't
yeah.
see it. So I now, as a coach, have to create drills on them seeing it faster and having more time because they have great improv or impulse control. So it really has made me a better coach and our staff for that matter of how to be creative in drills for that specific athlete and not just for the team. Because there's a lot of coaches out there that know the game of hockey and can do X's and O's. But what we're trying to do is revolutionize this sport and be very creative on how we coach the athlete because every athlete thinks the game differently, but we don't know how they think.
Sure.
So we
yeah.
have to take the test. And then from those findings, we can create drills for that athlete to have them see the game better and to have better performance and execution.
Sports science is one of those things
it's
that
sports, they're both neurologists.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I'm not going to question them on
no,
on too much.
I wouldn't either. And I'm
but
a proponent
this,
of using all
the
those
numbers don't lie, which
avenues.
Is great. You know what I mean? And
yeah.
I try to take as much subjectivity out and put in as much science as possible. I mean, of course, you coach, so you have to have that subjectivity. I've been doing it 14 years, so I want to take that into consideration. But then you have the science and the numbers don't lie. And that's what the athletes look
yeah,
at now, too.
Yeah.
I'm like, these are your numbers, and how can we help you get better? There's no right or wrong answer. It's just opportunities, and let's continue to advance those ones that you have that are solid and get you in situations that you can continue to be stronger because you're strong in this area of the ice.
Nadine, what is what do you think is the number one reason why you figured this out so well as a head coach?
Unfortunately, I don't think there's one answer, but honestly, I really think it's my commitment to excellence, my pursuit for perfection. You're not going to be perfect, but I'm definitely going to pursue it. And I always joked, like, my husband thought I had a boyfriend the first 4 years because I didn't come home till like 1 a.m. You know what I mean?
It's, yeah.
I didn't, by the way, but but
well, you did, and its name was hockey.
Yeah, his name was hockey.
Yeah.
But and he's been good to me. But to be honest, I wasn't afraid to work, and I had a great support system with my mom and husband back home. And my husband played college football, so he understood what it took to be the best. And
yeah.
I just think that there's nothing. We learned from the Navy SEALs that I worked with was your body can endure more pain. It's your mind that quits. And so I just didn't allow my mind to quit. And I expanded my mind and challenged it. And, you know, if you felt tired, well, what was the end result? Oh, a national championship. I'll sleep when I'm dead.
I love it. I love it. I'll leave you with this, Nadine. What is the best thing about being a Buckeye?
Honestly, it's how much honor there is in wearing that jersey. No disrespect to my alma mater at Minnesota. You know, I won a few championships there as a player and as an assistant coach. But the honor you have to put on a Buckeye jersey, I have never experienced. Whether it's hockey, lacrosse, soccer, football, there is just an immense amount of pride from the entire state of Ohio in the Buckeyes. I never felt that at Minnesota. And you don't even feel it when you go to other states and play the game that it's so passionate at in Massachusetts. You know, Minnesota's big, but there's so many other teams that are D1 in Minnesota. We're it. We're the D1 program. And I'm telling you, like, I remember when I first was working crazy hours and I'd, you know, still have to go grocery shopping at midnight. And I would walk around and I am being, you know, questioned every time I would go into any kind of store. And they'd be like, wow, you're wearing a Buckeye sweatshirt? Do you work there? And I didn't tell them what I did, but I just said, yeah, I work at OSU. And they're like, oh, my God. It was like you were so important because you were able to have the luxury of working at the Ohio State University.
Yeah.
I mean, we bought the rights for the word the. I mean, enough said, right, with us of how we view ourselves, too. You're either hated or you're loved. And I love that. I love that. I tell the team all the time, hey, you rolling in here the way you do and who we are with the brand.
With that block O. Yeah.
The block O and the script Ohio. People just hate you without even talking to you. And there's joy in that. You know what I mean? There's such a title and a history and a tradition and a legacy, really, that our football team has built for our athletic department. And we're just trying to keep up to pace with that legacy.
I love that. You lean into that and you get fired up for what it does. And it's so great. Nadine Muzzerall, kind enough to have us to the lounge at the iconic St. John Arena. Really appreciate it. It was great to catch up with you.
Thanks.
Really enjoyed the conversation. Thank you so much.
And thanks. I'd just like to give a shout out to Brian, the head coach for the men's soccer team, and wish them luck. The Big Ten on Sunday will be there as a team rooting for you. Go Bucks.
Nadine really is great, isn't she? Giving a shout out to one of her fellow coaches at Ohio State as we end. I hope you all enjoyed that conversation with one of the most successful coaches around the block, women's hockey coach Nadine Muzzerall. This has been the 360 with Ohio State Athletics podcast presented by Kroger, where our goal is to talk to every single head coach at Ohio State. Until next time, I'm Timmy Hall in for Matt Andrews. Thanks for listening.